from Y01 Radio's Live Lounge. This is the Doctor, the Therapist, and the Coach with your host, Gemma Taylor.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Y01 Live Lounge in Goodram Gate with the Doctor, Dr. Angela Wright, with the Therapist, Mrs. Colette Saffill, and with the Coach, moi, Gemma Taylor. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
It's nice good to see you.
And, I mean, I know it's something that we might talk about a lot, but what did you do this weekend?
Well, you're not going to believe it, but I wrote a book.
Oh, did you? And what did you do this weekend?
I feel like I wrote one too.
Oh, what did I do this weekend?
Did you write a book?
I wrote a book. We wrote a book. We did. We finished it. How amazing are we?
It was like the impossible. So you sent out, obviously, people don't know this, you sent out a schedule yep. of the impossible and then sent it on WhatsApp in written form to make me think it was possible.
Yeah.
And
I didn't think it was possible.
It wasn't possible.
It wasn't possible.
It actually wasn't possible.
Yeah, but we finished it, didn't we?
But we finished it, yeah.
That's and because we're scared of you, Gemma. So we just did what you said.
I think it's because you're an amazing coach.
Well, yeah, there you true. Go, you see? The plan works.
And we saw your plans. We saw your highly coloured colouring in book plans.
Yes, as soon as I get an idea, I get a very large pad, a very, very large amount of Sharpies, and I colour it in like I'm a child.
I felt like we were pawns in Gemma's game. That was my major kind of feeling, was just like a little chess piece going in, you will go there and you will go there. And I liked it. I actually really liked that feeling.
But I think, you know, with all the podcasts that we're doing and, you know, the sort of the doctor, the therapist, the coach going forward, this book is going to be very, very, very helpful for anybody that's listening that wants to sort of consolidate all of our advice into one thing. There you go. Bing, bang, bosh. Here's a book.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. And we wrote it in the most beautiful setting, didn't we? At Caton Bay.
Caton Bay, looking over the sea.
Rented an Airbnb.
Absolutely beautiful.
Such
Definitely
a nice one.
Better than a place near a nuclear power station that you suggested, Gemma.
Listen, I was all over the place for the nuclear power station. I thought it might enhance our brain a little bit.
All I could think of is that bit at the beginning of The Simpsons with the fish with too many eyes.
But then Angela came up with the Caton Bay experience, and there we go. It was a very, very good choice. Very good choice.
It's a beautiful, beautiful, big glass gable end window looking out over the sea.
And then we did yoga to start with, taken by the lovely Colette.
By me in the morning on the grass, again, looking over the sea.
Yes, it was very good. And it was a very beautiful Airbnb as well. So thank you very much, Airbnb, Caton Bay. If you want to have a look at where we stay, just go on Airbnb, put Caton Bay in and look for the one with the big glass window.
I think that was perfect. It was a really good way to spend a weekend.
Yeah, very accomplished.
Doing the impossible.
Doing the impossible, we achieved it. Also today, we are going to be talking about the struggle. And what I really like about the fact that this weekend we have completely written the book, which is to totally accompany our podcast series, the struggle is probably one of my favourite parts. And before we all came in today, I Googled what the struggle meant. So Mr. Google or Mrs. Google or just Google, whichever it identifies as, striving to achieve or attain something in the face of difficulty or resistance. And I thought, oh, that's got something we can get our teeth into, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
Because I think if you've just said, right, we're going to sit and write a book.
Yeah.
Well, Angela and I sat there for 2 hours before you turned up and accomplished absolutely nothing.
Well, we went backwards.
I think we did go backwards.
I allowed you to cheat on your dietary protocol.
You did, yeah. And then we formed a pact whereby she wasn't going to rat me out and did anyway.
That's because I can't look at Gemma and not tell her everything that's in my soul.
Don't look at her when you lie. This is how you make it work. Look the other way when you're lying.
Okay. I love it. Well, it really did work, actually. You know, the whole it wasn't even a struggle. I think that, you know, today's topic being the struggle, I personally found nothing of the weekend writing the book. I think that's probably the latest thing of monumentous proportions that I've personally achieved. I don't know about you guys.
I stayed in a room for 2 days without moving much, so that in itself was quite
exactly.
a new experience for me. And also, I actually felt like I got out of my own way, and so it got easier as time went on with the writing process because I kind of relaxed and just stopped editing and kind of went. And yeah, I loved it. I really enjoyed it.
Mm.
For me, I think it was the fact that it felt like it was going to be massive and unachievable before we started it, so before we tried. But because when you plan something, I think it's the Sri Lankans have a saying, you know, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? Mm. And there's something in that, because everything was just bite-sized chunks, and anyone can do the next 10 minutes. Mm. So the idea of doing all of it was too big.
Yep.
And that almost... I don't think it wouldn't have prevented me going, but I can see how that could stop someone starting something. Was actually doing the do was nowhere near as difficult as thinking it.
Yeah, absolutely. And also we had people with us. I think, you know, back to the themes that we wrote about getting a, you know, team around you, your support tribe and all that sort of stuff, that was very much part of the process. If I'd been left on my own to try and
you
get what was in
there.
I
think you would have just gone on your bike.
No, I would have been on the beach.
You'd be in the Netherlands somewhere. Someone go and get Angela. And also our partners, you know, obviously Dr. Angela and I both have husbands and children, and our husbands looked after the children. My husband's a bit codependent, so he brought the children to Caton Bay to camp in our camper van, to surf on the beach I could see, and sleep the night in the field behind the house we were in.
It was nice to know he was just around the corner.
Just around the corner. But I think there's something about having that support system kind of further around you as well, mm-hmm. so you can like make time in it. I know a lot of women I see in my clinic really struggle to make time for themselves. Mm-hmm. And it is partly, you know, you have to have the support system to do it. And then sometimes just saying, I'm taking this time.
But I think, you know, what I see a lot of is people not seeing what support is available to them and not realising, you know, it's obviously a really easy one to say, oh, well, you know, I've got a husband, I've got a partner, you know, they're very, very supportive. But in actual fact, if you don't have a husband or a partner that's supportive, or if you're going through a problem period of time where you don't feel like you've been supported, there are supports in other ways. You know, it's like if you are struggling with anything, if you look around and you really look for something and you set it as a goal, you will find that you can find out support.
It's very true. If you acknowledge where your barriers are, but look at them with a view to overcoming them rather than them being barriers. For example, I know your partner's overseas. So mm-hmm. I think your sister had your children at the weekend.
Both my sister and parents, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if you look at something, okay, so this is objectively a potential barrier to what I want to achieve. What can I do to... If I wanted to make this one thing different, what would I do with that one thing? Not all of it, and not letting that stop you before you start.
And I mean, what, Dr. Angela, what struggles at the moment? Because obviously they are quite seasonal. Do you not think struggling, it comes, for me, in my clinic, it comes in seasons. But what struggles at the moment are you seeing that are the most prevalent?
I've just had a morning doing some of my sort of private clinical work this morning and checking in with patients who've been struggling with two things that I wrote about this weekend, with hormonal mood sensitivity and undiagnosed neurodiversity.
So, yes.
A couple of people that I was speaking to this morning were, and those two things often overlap quite a lot and are often things that people don't understand about or know to look for, but also often quite sort of just define your experience of your world around you. So there's this real sense of being different but not really knowing why you're different, and that process of understanding what that's about can help you to almost kind of get a lens in where, oh God, not only do you look back at the life that you've had up to this point with different eyes and realize it wasn't you, it was you, but it was a biological you, it wasn't a you that you could do something about.
Yeah.
But also those things are often inherited and run through your families. So in terms of your story and where you've come from and the relationships that you may have had with parents and siblings and so on, which can be fractious when people don't necessarily understand what's triggering them or causing them problems, it can be a real moment where everything comes into clarity. So that's in my mind this morning. And actually, even from Monday when I was in clinic, I saw a huge amount of hormonal issues in GP on Monday, and all with that theme.
Yeah, I think, you know, hormones in general, you've got, you know, whether it's men, women, fish, dogs, whatever, you know, hormones are something, if they are not, now I don't want to say balanced, because I know that you don't always have to find a balance.
Balance is an issue.
Irregulated?
Yeah, I was going to be dysregulated as well.
Dysregulated?
I want to ping that back at you. I think so. The thing with PMDD and PMS, so that's premenstrual syndrome and premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which are sort of two related conditions. It's not that your hormones are out of balance, it's that your body is reacting to them paradoxically. So they're meant to, there's a breakdown product of of progesterone that sort of interacts with the GABA bit of our nervous system, and that's the same thing that alcohol and diazepam interact with, and it's meant to be nice and calming and soothing.
Yeah.
And for most people it behaves like that, but for a small proportion of women it has a paradoxical effect. It makes them feel negative and irritable, right, and edgy and agitated. And when that's being stimulated, you feel like that. But when you come out of that window with your month of hormones and you haven't got that stimulation, you act as you did before it was there. So you can look at your world, and as I've had experience of this because I have that sort of issue myself, you can look at your world and see it completely differently within a 24-hour period. And the very same things that normally make you really happy can make you want to just, and everyone wants to escape. Every woman I've ever spoken to wants to get in a car and drive away. And it's like the pathognomonic kind of statement that I listen to, that they just want to remove themselves. So it's not that your hormones aren't the wrong thing, it's that your body behaves differently in response to them than somebody else's does.
And also, we are full now, much more so than in the past, of hormonal disruptors. You know, we're surrounded by so many more chemicals. I remember when I used to live in Iceland, and my ex-husband's father owned a car paint company, and every time I walked in there, I immediately got heartburn. My head immediately started bouncing with pain. I never got, I'm not a headachey sort of person, but the pain behind my eyes, and it was just my whole body just went into shutdown because I was around so many chemicals, and I was living quite a very clean existence. So, you know, we are, and these all have a knock-on effect that, you know, that sort of have fluctuations with, you know, ups and downs of different hormones. And of course, with, you know, insulin and the amount of sugar that's around, and, you know, are there ways that you can help people start to regulate their hormonal profiles?
Oh, my brain's bouncing around with loads of answers to that question. I'm working out which way to go. Part of what I was talking about this morning with one of the ladies that I was talking to was about diet, and she was saying, well, do you believe that diet does anything? Do you believe that there's things and supplements? And I was talking about you two, actually, and saying, you know, that we are jigsaw pieces to each other's approaches.
Yeah.
Because all of the things make a difference. So, you know, you cannot fix a hormonal mood issue with CBT alone or with behavioural things alone, because you've got a biological thing that's not working properly. You're in a more difficult situation in the first place. But, you know, if you shout at your child and then you feel bad about it afterwards, you can use behavioural things to help you to cope with how you feel. And you can use diet massively. I mean, you know this inside out, but we are not living the lives that our bodies were designed to live. We don't
absolutely
eat the
not
foods that we were designed to eat. We don't have the patterns. We don't have periods where we don't eat and then periods where we have plenty. So much of that sort of base physiology that we take for granted in our culture, that, like you said at the weekend, that we have cereal for breakfast, crisps and a sandwich for dinner, that is normal.
Spaghetti bolognese for tea.
But it's normal, but it's not what we were evolved to do. Mm-hmm. And I 100% think that you can do better than the average diet, and than, you know, to control these things.
Yeah. And I mean, Colette, from a therapist perspective, what, I know that obviously you can't talk about individual you know, clients, but what are you seeing struggle wise as a general, so sort of generic struggle? What do you see as the most struggly thing?
People who just feel they cannot make a difference in their own lives for whatever reason. They either don't have the skills, they are in a set of circumstances that they either can't see how they've got into, and or they can't see how they can get out of. There's quite a few people I've worked with quite recently who seem to be sacrificing the now for the later. And you just laughed at me then, Gemma, given that I probably haven't had lunch or breakfast today, and I might not have managed any dinner last night.
Have you been bad?
I've just been working.
And then can we just stop that right there? Because this is a great example from my perspective. So, and I was actually talking about you the other day about how, you know, you're a very busy person and you have got 16 different businesses and 35 children.
Yeah.
And
36.
Is it 36? I think so. Because she can have ours as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Put them into your pot.
I would be Colette's child.
I was just thinking, Andrew. Yeah.
But you are holding a lot of stuff. Mm. And it gets to a point where it becomes an unhealthy practice.
Yes.
That you are doing so much, and it's not too much, because, you know, it's like the stronger you are, the more you can carry. So being strong at that point is not a healthy thing to be, because you're carrying so much, and you're just not going to break because you can fulfill the carry.
Yeah, I do have the, I'll speak for myself, but I do have this kind of capacity whereby the more I'm required to have capacity, the more capacity I have.
Yeah.
And for the most part, as you say, I don't break. The question would be, just because I can do it, should I do it?
Exactly. It's a choice.
And it's about parenting yourself. And this is what I say to my clients, you know, and I've got a few markers in my own life which always make me think, no, no, bit too much now, back off, say no, pull back a bit. And everyone's got a reason why it's harder for them, or it's different this time, it's school holidays, it's, you know, whatever you're doing, there's always a reason. But I think I read recently that, you know, you can say, I absolutely haven't got the time for something, and then if you were to have an accident and break your arm or something, you would have the time to go to hospital.
Exactly.
So you can always make some time somewhere, and it's more what you choose to do with it, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm quite structured and routine, so I like to have a look at the balance of what I'm doing in my day. I know you say to me, what you do with your head, you need to do with your body. Mm. What you do with your brain, you need to exercise in your body as well. And just making sure you have those kind of those boundaries of when you get up, when you go to bed, when you eat, when you exercise. Yep. And just keeping an eye on it.
And the boundaries, I think, you know, when you are struggling, and, you know, obviously with the topic being about the struggle, struggling doesn't necessarily mean that you're failing. And I think that's a huge, huge point. That it's just that you are in a situation at this current moment in time that is trying. It is difficult. It is different from your normal, you know, sort of content feeling. So it puts you into a different perspective, into a different mindset, into a different place that you're actually looking, but you're not failing. You are just going through a storm.
And sometimes it's going through a learning.
Yes.
Yeah. So I've got a new startup business. It's very, very busy. Massive period of learning and growth. And I can feel a bit overwhelmed. Normally, if I really step back and look at it, it's an admin thing. It's like I haven't planned something properly. I haven't diarised something properly. I've dropped a ball somewhere. Or I've just not given myself time to adequately learn something new that I need to learn in order to be able to function. Instagram Reels, by the way, is my current bugbear. And I see that in my clients. So they'll come in with a crisis, and then they'll need new skills, and they won't give themselves time to learn and practice those skills. So I often say, if you watch children learn to walk, you know, they don't get up and learn to walk and then run a marathon. It's not the process. So really just it's a more exploratory than that.
Yes. And I think with when you are looking at struggling in general, whether it's, you know, one of your clients, whether it's yourself, whether it's your family, whether it's your children, it's like you said, it is an absolutely essential part of the entire journey. If you do not struggle, you do not learn.
Exactly.
You know, nothing new ever comes out of a comfort zone. Ever, you know, if you're learning something, it's hard, and just accept that you are in a hard place.
I have a few markers in my life that tell me, okay, that's it now. And for me, one is, as you know, and as you know, Angela, I do yoga every day, morning and night, just a few sun salutations, and I can do it in 3 minutes, and that's enough for me. 3 minutes in the morning, 3 minutes at night. If I'm living in a way where I don't have time to do that, that's a problem. I've gone well too far then, and I need to come right back.
Yeah.
And that's probably my single biggest marker.
I have a siren list, and I wrote it with the little emojicon siren. And what
did you do it in colour?
I'm just grinning because I don't have one of these things. I have none of these markers, and it all makes sense.
You have us. We are your markers.
I do. That's why I need you. Sorry, it's like a real penny dropping moment listening here and going, "Oh, that would be useful."
Because the other thing is, what's a problem for someone else might not be a problem for you. So lots of people, and we all said this at the weekend. We're all neurodiverse women, but different from each other as well. And we all have people say to us, "How do you do all that?" And we all said, "How do you not?"
Yeah. How do you not? And I don't think anybody believed, apart from myself. You know, and it's. When I wrote that structure, and when I wrote everything that we were going to do over the weekend, I categorically, using all of the processes that I know as a coach, bearing in mind that I get people to win world championships and I get people to, you know, do things that they've never believed was even possible.
Can't part me from a stone, though.
That's going to be a career marker.
That's a siren. Can't part. But no, it's one of those things that, you know, you've. the belief system of what you can and what you're able to do is, you know, there are no limits to it. And it's just what you're, you know, what you can genuinely see happen.
And that's what I see in clinic. People have lost the vision. They've lost the ability to see. They're kind of so stuck where they are that they can't see where to, how to get out, how to move out of that. So so a lot of it is around, like you were saying, Angela, about, you know, people coming to you for medication and clinical assessments and things. But I know we spoke at the weekend, but then sometimes people don't take their medication. And that's again where therapists can come in to find out, well, what is that barrier? What's going on to that?
And one of the things that we did do in the book, because there is the book is
did
all
we
about
write a
the
book
journey.
At the weekend.
Did you write a book this weekend?
I don't
weekend?
Know. Did you write a book?
Did you write a book?
I totally
weekend?
Wrote a book at the weekend.
I wrote a book this weekend.
Have we told everyone we've bumped into?
I told somebody that I was stood bit. Next to in the petrol station. I was stood there about to pay for my petrol and this guy was just stood there, obviously minding his completely his own business. And I turned to him and I caught his eye and I went, I wrote a book this weekend.
That's not weird.
And he just kind of looked at me and went, well done.
I must have said it a lot because my 11-year-old yesterday said, it's okay, Mummy wrote a book at the weekend. I can't remember what it was I'd done. So yes, our book.
But the thing, go back, the siren list. I wrote that siren list when I realised that there were things that I did not like. Now, you know, talking about from a hormonal perspective, I have polycystic ovary syndrome. I have a siren when my PCOS gets so bad, with obviously with it being very insulin resistant orientated, if I put, like, you know, carbohydrates into my diet, I immediately feel a difference in my hormones, and I just know from a mood perspective, from, you know, like getting irritated from, like, road rage is a great one for me. I never ever get road rage ever, but if somebody, you know, does something, you know, conscious or unconscious on the road, and then I am aware of what they've done, that for me is a huge siren, because I never get cross with other people, because I understand that we all make mistakes. It's not stupid, you know. They're not doing it on purpose, hopefully, but that for me is a siren for me to go, right, hang on a minute, what's in my diet, what have I misplaced, what am I not eating, what am I eating? And because of that being a siren, I am so particular. I am so absolutely brilliant when it comes to morning, noon and night, so that I can keep my blood sugar balanced, so that I don't have to go into this world of, you know, I never, ever snap at my children. That's a siren. If I ever snap or, you know, just get cross or even just, that's a siren for me, because it's behaviour that I do not allow in my house.
I think that's a really good point, and particularly as you get older, you know what your own behaviours are and what your own weaknesses are. So I'm prone to overwork. That's my biggest thing.
Yeah.
You know, I've got other clients who might be prone to drink or prone to other risk-taking behaviours or acting out behaviours. So if you're aware of where you're likely to end up, and that could be, you know, a huge alarm bell for you.
And, I mean, when you are struggling and you are in, you know, I always see struggle, you know, we've all got a boat and the struggle is the storm, but
I've got two boats.
You've got two, yes, of course. and like roller skates.
Like roller skates, yeah. Makes me go faster.
Yeah. So the boat is in a bit of a storm, and how do you captain that ship? You know, how do you wait for the storm to pass, but then after each storm, you're a better sailor. Mm. You know, each storm does make a better sailor.
How many boats do you have, Angela?
I'm just counting them, and I can't get to the end of the numbers at the moment.
I can see you
counting
them.
Infinite boats.
Infinite boats, all in a storm.
Where I was going to go, though, was that it's a really lovely analogy, because actually, and I was saying the weekend, I'm such a visual thinker, so immediately I've got, you know, Colette standing on two boats, and she's kind of doing like a surfing, paddle boarding sort of thing.
Am I looking really cool?
You're looking incredibly
That's
sexy.
Fine.
And
excellent.
Also,
it's all I need.
What I was going to get to was the skill. What I think is a really nice analogy is, it's a difficult thing, it's a struggle, but we don't congratulate people on having skill in negotiating difficult things. So we name these emotions very negatively. They're at the wrong end of the feeling wheel. We think something's wrong with us when we feel the emotions, whereas what we probably should do is consider them to be a useful toolkit for getting through the difficult periods that none of us can not go through. I wrote in one of the bits that I did at the weekend about my cycling, because for the first year or so that I was riding a bike, I was really, really sad and fixated on the numbers and trying to go faster. So every ride I did on the flat in the best conditions with the wind behind me to try and improve my numbers. And I never got any better and I got really frustrated. Yeah. And I only got better when I started to use the windy day to go and do hills, because that was a better, you know, that was a better thing to do. Yeah. And then by putting myself through deliberate periods of uncomfortable work, I got better overall and more honed at sort of being in that bit of my range, that uncomfortable bit of my range.
Because we did talk about that, didn't we? How we tend to measure the outcomes rather than the intent and the effort.
I think there's something very beautiful about struggling as well. I always feel quite... Well, not at this beginning, and I think struggle has three parts to it. It has the beginning, the middle, and the bit where you come out of it. The beginning part feels quite negative because you're like, oh no, and you just feel this, you know, oh god, it's about to happen, oh, and then it brings out all of the, this always happens to me. You become the victim of the struggle, la 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 la. But then you've got the middle bit where you're actually doing the do's, and you start to, you know, climb the ladder, or you start to, you know, try and figure out how you're going to get through it. And then there's the end part where it stops being as difficult because you've learnt the skills, and then you're coming, you can see actually the end part, the finish line, and how it looks towards the last part. And then when you look, if you do ever look back, and this is what I do try and get my clients to do, whether it's, you know, learning how to jump or learning how to climb a rope or learning how to deadlift, whatever it is, then they look back and they go, actually I'm a much more skilled person now. I've got more to my CV, you know, more to my bank of knowledge. And every struggle is an absolutely phenomenal opportunity to get to the next level, the next rung of the ladder, the next point in your life, the next part of the journey, whatever it is, whether it's hormones, whether it's your mental capability, whether it's your, you know, your happiness level in life, whether it's the where you are in your relationship. It's the focus on, actually, that's the learning part.
Yeah, we need to be better at reacting to not knowing or not being able to do something with curiosity and some sort of resilience rather than with panic. I'm going to get this probably wrong because I read a lot and never manage to sort of pin everything down in exactitude, but there is, prolactin is a hormone that goes up when you're stressed. And there's a lovely study or studies that show that if you're stressed and feeling out of control, your prolactin level is much higher than when you become stressed and feeling in control in the stress.
Wow.
So even on a neurobiological level, we react differently to that sense of, it's really, really hard, but it's okay, I know what I'm doing and I can kind of get through this hard phase.
Yeah.
To when we're in a sort of sense of overwhelm where it's really hard and we don't know what we're doing. So I do think we miss a trick by labelling stuff as hard and therefore we should want it to stop, rather than hard and therefore we should want to hone how we get more skilled at dealing with that hard.
Yes.
I know a lot of people say to me, and I imagine to you too as well, you know, you do too much, you run too fast, you're stressed.
Stay still. I don't want to stay still.
And you're stressed when you stay still. Yeah. I know. And I'm stressed when I do nothing because my brain needs something to do.
Yeah.
And then I feel like I should be okay doing nothing because that's what I've been told I should be doing. Yeah. And then I get more stressed.
Yeah,
and it doesn't do me any favours. I don't quite know where that comes from in society, but the reason I just kind of hopped back on the mic then is you said about, you know, this kind of goal orientation. We're kind of the next goal, the next goal, the next goal, with no real resilience. And again, I see that. I see people saying, well, but what's the point of me doing that? Whatever that is, what's the point of me doing that? Well, what's the point of you not? I think that's something to do with our education system. You know, we're testing our children from, what, 2-3 years old?
But testing them against the wrong things. So I'm sat here tomorrow morning, my poor boy, tomorrow morning he gets his exam results, and he's getting really crossed at me for even bringing it up. In fact, he is so in his own little world and probably neurodiverse too. He didn't even think they were out until Friday because he's got the date wrong in his head and like the calendar's gone to pieces. But, you know, I think what I find difficult watching him go through the system and watching all three of mine go through the system is we reward certain skills really well. So if you're diligent, you can hold your calendar together, you can be organised, you can write neatly, you can do what, you can be given a plan and you can respond by doing what that plan is.
Yeah.
We reward that really highly. But if you have an outlier brain and you look at things differently and you're quite creative in your thinking and you're a bit messy in the way you put things down, we don't reward that. But most of our artists, most of our, you know, big thinkers, most of our entrepreneurs, they have brains that didn't work like they were. And I've got a sort of, you know, parentheses here, or what are they called? Speech marks. Help me, Gemma.
Speech marks.
I want to use the word parentheses more than I can. You know, when you have a normal brain, it's great that it is. And you're going to find that you get on a little bit more smoothly and you click with lots of people. Mm. But there really is nothing wrong with having a slightly differently wired brain. And we really need them.
We do. Yeah. I know when I was at school, I always wanted to be one of those girls who could underline things and had like different colour pens. Gemma. Had like different colour pens to underline things in. But that's just not how my brain works. No. I've got bits of shopping list along with my thought processes and my thing. I'm, you know, it all in one place, all on the back of something, just on the side in the kitchen, because that's how my brain works. And other people don't do that, and they've got those multicolored bulldog clips and they put them on the wall, and that's all nice and tidy. I noticed at my girls' school, yeah, they have that. There's this bit in their diaries that always says, oh well, they're not very well organized, or they're not very well planned. And I think, well, you know, both my daughters are very young, and I think they should be out playing. I don't really care if they can follow their diary. I've got older shoes. I just don't know why we're using that as a marker. Surely that's the age where you have the unboundary brain, where it's all that you can imagine, which means we can achieve more.
Well, this is the whole thing about culture and scripts and everything else, isn't it? We have decided what a desirable set of skills and aspirations and everything else looks like. We've wrapped it up and called it education, and that's what we try and sort of, you know, rinse and repeat. Let's just bring out at the other end citizens that look like they're supposed to look. And I think it's quite an important commentary to be able to. So I've talked to my kids about the fact that that is one way of doing things, but there are lots of other ways of getting up a ladder. And actually, do you even want to be on that ladder? Do you want to be in a different ladder? Do you want to, you know, what does that look like for you?
And this isn't even constant over time and space. It changes with every government, you know. So it's not about the person at all. It's an external structure. And I see a lot of people in my clinic, but particularly people who are kind of mid-40s onwards, who are really struggling with this, because they've done the external script, they've done all those kind of markers, and they've passed all the, but they realise that's not what they wanted.
Absolutely.
And it couldn't be further from who they are, and they've almost kind of run out of capacity to pretend anymore. You know, so I think some of that struggle is with like your insides and your outsides not matching.
That's exactly. I mean, I think
which
I see lots of people.
Which isn't an overly technical term.
No, but it's exactly. So we talked about the congruence, and that's exactly it, isn't it? I see lots of women at midlife, and I feel like they are finally going, you know what, I played the game. I tried really hard to lose that extra half stone and get the capsule wardrobe, and, you know, look after my children, have my house look nice, and do my career, and do mindfulness and have a green smoothie. And yet my skin is still changing. I'm still knackered. My joints hurt. You know, I feel invisible. The game's rigged, and they have a real anger about that. And I think it's because we never get invited to question whether the game we're playing is fair. We're just so bloody busy trying hard to win at it. And then you reach a point where you can't. So for the women I see, that's kind of menopause. But that happens, I think, in lots of the clients that you two will see will have reached that same point of going, hang on a minute. I am not happy, and I've done everything I'm supposed to have done.
Yeah. And what I find when people, you know, join the gym or start doing, because they've obviously, as we've talked about in previous podcasts, they have had that push. They've made the decision to get there. They've had the refusal to want to do it, and obviously they've now come into the part where they've gone, right, okay, I'm going to do this, and then all of a sudden they say, I'm going to do this, and realize, hang on a minute, it's really hard. And it's, for me, it's about managing expectations when you've made the decision to do something different or to change anything, to understand that it is going to be difficult. It is going to be a struggle. It is going to be new. It is going to be something that is very, very different to what your norm is.
And back to the wiring, it's new wiring. You know, when you learn to drive and you have to really think about what you're doing, and we talked about the fact that I couldn't do right-hand turns, and you have to kind of, this is really clunky, and you're having to think about it. And everything that's become habitual in your life that you've been doing for the last 30 years is now in a kind of implicit memory place where you're just doing it. You're not even noticing it. So it is massively effortful to go in and to a shop just now and not buy carbs, because I'm sat with you. I'm looking in the shop going, there's nuts. All I can see is nuts. I don't really want nuts. I want a sandwich.
I can see the scone shop from there.
Listen, it's about understanding for me, when I get a client in and I say to them, look, this is what you want to achieve. This is, you know, what you think is the end goal. It's actually not, it's the middle. And then we're going to get you there, but it's going to be this hard. And this is how we're going to do it. And it's when you bring in the how that all of a sudden someone goes, hang on a minute. For example, the structure of the weekend. You know, I was like, right, we're going to write a book this weekend. Every single person that I told that to before the weekend went, that was it.
But there are many people who couldn't have done it.
Yeah. Mm. But because I genuinely brought in the how.
Mm. And yeah, that's you really it. Did.
It's the how. And I do that with my clients.
Well, we trusted the process though, didn't we? I think there was, I got that schedule through and I kind of looked at it and went, that's ridiculous. There's no way that we can manage that. In fact, I noticed there was no cycling included, which really upset me.
That's correct.
And there was no hot tub time. And I was like, this is a weekend in a beautiful house with a hot tub. I did not go in the hot tub, people. I didn't go in the hot tub.
And Gemma messaged Angela privately to tell her not to bring me any snacks.
Yeah, I was given a separate message in a kind of danger.
I think you've given me a role in your life to help you get to what you want to get to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
I don't have to make that a big thing in front of you because you didn't need to know
to contain me,
yeah,
she was
contain like, you. Yeah, yeah. She
do not let Angela be the loose cannon with her calves.
I feel the need to explain. I've got a thing to go to next month that requires a frock, and I've got a particular frock I want to wear. So Gemma is trying to coach me into the frock. Angela was clearly the wobbly nut potentially in the process.
I can't believe you've actually called me a wobbly nut.
I think you are. You are a wobbly nut.
I think this is the outcome of spending a whole weekend with each other.
Professionally, that's not going to be a great tagline. Go and see Dr. Angela. The wobbly nuts.
I said wobbly at the weekend, actually, when Gemma lifts really heavily things, her eyes wobble.
Well, the thing is, that to get back to the structure...
Get back to some points.
It's the you said you trusted the process. What does that mean? It instilled confidence that it was possible.
Yes.
And confidence is, for me, if you see somebody struggling, I'm going to talk to myself, talk about me. If I see somebody struggling, I go, right, okay, hold my hand. What are we going to do? Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to instill confidence. What do you need to be confident about what you're going through? Because as soon as you switch from being unconfident to confident, your mindset changes, your eyes change, your perspective changes, everything changes.
Your hormones change.
And you that's absolutely right. And your stress levels change. Because the thing is, for what I do, especially when I was competing in the World's Strongest Woman competition, stress was a real positive. Mm. I was putting stress purposefully on my body so that it had a reaction and it got stronger. So, you know, when I was deadlifting, it was a very stressful, you know, thing to do physically. But in response to that, my body went, hang on a minute, we need to grow.
Mm.
The lobster is a beautiful analogy. The lobster can only shed its shell when it is so stressed and it is so absolutely, completely compact. It has no other choice than to grow. And every time a lobster sheds its shell, it gets 1 inch bigger. And that is what happens. It's so, so tight and so, so stressed. It has no other option to take its shell off.
I'm loving the analogy because that's the reality of so much of what we do, isn't it? It's back to that. We greet these challenges as if they're real negatives. We have this huge pull that wants us to stay doing the same, even when we're unhappy. We still want to stay with what we know because it's less frightening than doing something different. And yet you never get anything that's truly stimulating, rewarding. You know, that there isn't a lot of those sort of adjectives in staying and doing the same thing all the time. So putting yourself out of your comfort zone, as I always say, it's one foot in your comfort zone and one foot in something new, I think, is like the peak place that we should be. And that comfort zone around you ends up being a support team, it ends up being a structure, it ends up being exactly what we had this weekend, which is we're going to do something difficult, but I'm in really safe company. I know that if I'm doing something with you guys, I've got my hand held, I've got my brain met, it's going to be okay.
So I've got a question for you two, and I'm really excited about this, and I'm glad that we've got to this point in this podcast today, because I like switching things on their head, right? And before we go into our tips and tricks and awesome, like, you know, useful things, I want you, and this is a bit on the spot,
we're thrilled.
What are the benefits? You can go menopause on this.
Okay.
But what are the benefits of when you are struggling hormonally?
When you say, so when you say hormones, though, I always think, are you talking about stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol?
Anything.
And...
I mean, okay, so with the menopause, for example, what is the benefit of going through the menopause?
Do you know the thing that I sometimes say, and it's probably a ridiculous thing to say, but it's not going to stop me, is that sometimes when you have hormonal problems, it's almost like you lose your rose-tinted glasses. So actually, I think women's base position, or many women's base position, is to sort of pacify, to solidify, to calm, to put up with and facilitate everybody and everything around them. And I sometimes think, and I'm almost from personal experience, but also from the many, many women I've spoken to that have said the same thing, that when you're in that irritable part of the month, or you're feeling like you've got a shorter fuse, sometimes your reactions are actually quite okay. They're Absolutely. Actually quite appropriate to and what's quicker. Jarring around you. But it's also that sense of you are no longer able to put up with the things that you can brush off in your fuzz of nice hormones. You're actually in a bit of the month where you're taking your rose-tinted glasses off and you're going, well, that's bloody unreasonable and I'm not okay with that and I can't manage that. And you're saying it. Everyone around you goes, oh my God, what's happened to her?
Yeah.
But actually, I think it does galvanize quite a lot of change. I see a lot of women leaving jobs and leaving relationships, and that in itself isn't a bad thing if that was the right thing to do. I think the problem that women reach in menopause is that they then haven't got the confidence to move on to the new job, the new relationship. But if we manage that hormonal dysfunction in a proactive way and people know what to do, it can be a really big galvanizing
do
time.
Do you see a lot of fear when it comes to the known struggle? So as you approach the menopause age, are you seeing women coming in, I am scared too, ABC?
They're scared of menopause now because we've given them information about what can happen, and we're not marrying that with easy availability of solutions. So we're just saying, well, you're going to get hot flushes, you're going to put weight on, you're not going to sleep, it's going to be awful. And we make it confusing. We make it sound like it's out of reach and you need a lot of money to see somebody that's, you know, very, very high up in a private field or whatever. And we don't make it sort of inclusive. So I think it's important to match women to information mm-hmm. so that they can make a choice that suits them, because I genuinely don't care how someone manages their menopause as long as they've got all the information they need to
and
make an informed
they,
decision.
Should they fear it?
No, well, you can't do anything about it. There's no way of sidestepping it at the moment. They are looking at things like ovarian transfers, and there is science about whether we can sort of extend our hormone sort of period in our lives. But no, you can't. There's no point fearing it because you can't do a thing about it. It's going to happen. It's like anything. It's a challenge that needs a toolkit. So you need a toolkit.
Brilliant. And Colette, therapy-wise, what are the benefits of struggling in general? Whether we're talking about addiction, anxiety, depression, what are the benefits?
I guess, I don't know if it's about general struggle, but I think when the struggle gets to the point that there has to be change. So in my clinic, I see a lot of people who in their lives, it's quite a visual thing, really. It's like someone comes in and they're standing in a fire and they're actually on fire.
Yeah.
And most of their life seems to be about making that fire bearable or putting the flames out a bit or taking the pain away. So think drink, drugs, inappropriate behaviours, all those kind of things. And then people sometimes get to a point where they just go, like, none of that's working. I'm actually on fire and it needs to be different. So when we get to that, and it's not dissimilar to what you're saying, Angela, and that's kind of the point, we can say, okay, well, shall we do something else then? Mm. So rather than pretending we're not on fire, shall we just maybe step out of it? And shall we maybe go over there to a safer place and then have a look around and see what we can do differently?
Yeah.
So I think that's really positive when people get to that point.
Yeah, and it's the same with me. I think, you know, when I first started 20 years ago, being in the fitness industry, what I noticed very, very early on in my career was that the people that had a struggle were far more likely to commit to something than people that didn't. Mm. The people that just wanted to be fit, they didn't have a big enough why.
Yeah.
And for me, a struggle is the easiest why in the world. Mm. And I said to one of my clients, and this sounds terrible, and I apologise if anybody does have diabetes type 2, but one of my clients, I said, if you had diabetes type 2, you would be here every single training session putting your absolute 100% effort in, or 80% effort as I only let people go to. But in it, it because the reason would be big enough. Mm. If they're health challenge free, they're just like, oh, I can give it a
That's why people stop medication. It stopped. Yeah. They no longer feel quite so bad, and therefore they sort of lose that impetus to take the thing.
And it's such, when you have a health challenge, when you have something that has sideswiped you, that's pulled the rug from under your carpet, you know, like I said in the book, it's time to batten down the hatches, pull the rug from under your
carpet. Pull the carpet.
I saw your face. I'll start again. Pull the carpet from under your feet.
Thank you.
And it really does give you a much better starting point, because you've got a bigger reason to do it, and you've got the benefits of the struggle are it keeps you going. Mm. Because as soon as you stop, you go back into struggle. Yeah. So what's better? Focusing, you know, and that's absolutely fine. It's okay to struggle. And to reiterate what I said at the beginning, it is not a failure. Mm. And that's not trying to say that failures are bad. Failures are not bad either.
Failures are really helpful.
Yeah, failures are brilliant. But
I think
struggling,
we need a different word for them.
We do.
A not failure word.
Yeah. Just use that.
Or a different culture that kind of just accepts that it's completely normal that we're going to
learning. We could call it learning.
Learnings,
can't we?
Yeah. But the only proof that you've got when you're going through a struggle is that you've survived the struggle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look back, and this is why I think siren lists are really good things to have, because when you look back at, you know, what you are accepting in your life, what you're not accepting in your life, you know, your list of yeses and nos, when you look back at that, you only have proof that you've been through this many times before. Mm. And you've actually come out the other end. And it doesn't matter on the time scale how long it takes. It matters that you're taking the step, or just okay with being still. And I think for me, that's really important, that everybody has a different time scale. Mm. Everybody, you can't say, right, okay, this is going to take you 3 weeks to achieve. This is going to take you 12 weeks to achieve. You know, depending on what level of support you've got, depending on what's in your environment, depending on your emotional, you know, background, depending on your childhood, in fact. Mm. Mm. It depends on how the time scale time should be thrown, you know, thrown out of the bucket.
Well, homogenization is throwing out the bucket as well. That idea that everybody has to be one version. We'll say back to the neurodiversity, one type of brain, one type of hormonal function, one type of solution, one type of training, one type of therapy.
Yeah.
We just need to get better at celebrating difference, not giving it a judgment label, but just going, okay, there's just lots of different versions of people and things.
Yeah.
And that's that.
So what are your top tips for struggling?
I think it's renaming the language. For me, it is about seeing it not as something you're supposed to avoid and get out of, but seeing it as something that you can learn from.
Yeah.
And it's anywhere where there's that sort of junction between how you want things to be and how they are, that friction is actually a source of something really, really, really useful if you can meet it with curiosity.
Yeah. And Colette, what's your top tips?
I would say non-judgmental observation. So clever. If you feel you're struggling, then you probably are, and that feeling is trying to tell you something. And if we can not think about it as good and bad or right or wrong, or we're less than, we're not coping, we're not in the role properly, and just think, that's interesting, that's an interesting letter the postman's given me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Let's have a read of it.
Yeah.
And then have an observation and just think, well, am I struggling? Because it can feel like we're struggling in everything, when actually, I know when my children were young, 4:10 in the afternoon. Yeah, when you're trying to get tea ready, that is a struggle. But actually, other parts of the day were fine. So when you can step back and look at it, and they thought, actually, well, can I do something different with 4:10 in the afternoon?
Yeah.
And just look at it that way, but make it observational and non-judgmental.
And for me, I think it's get excited about the struggle. You know, as soon as I see something that's difficult, I have reframed my perspective on that, because, you know, I live a life that is constantly challenging myself. I like playing games.
We know.
Yes.
We know.
I like to do things that are really, really extraordinary. And I mean, that's just me. But I've reframed my position on what a struggle means to me. And I get really excited. Okay, it's not always, I'm not like, you know, the happiest person alive constantly. But I really look at a struggle as a positive rather than a negative, because the outcome of that is really good. So if you're struggling, for me, change the perspective. Change the way you're looking at it. Stand from a different viewpoint and look at it as something different. Ladies, as always, it has been a pleasure. Did you write a book this weekend?
I did write a book this weekend.
Angela, did you write a book this weekend?
I certainly did.
And well, I think we can agree, I was everyone's cup of sunshine.
You were. Yeah.
Ladies, it's been an absolute pleasure, as always. And we will see you very, very shortly for the next Doctor, the Therapist and the Coach podcast. Enjoy your time.
The Doctor, the Therapist and the Coach was presented by Gemma Taylor with Dr. Angela Wright and Colette Saffill. This was a Live Lounge podcast production from Y01 Radio. For more episodes of this and other podcasts, go to y01radio.co.uk.